If you have your Bibles, I'm going to invite you to turn all the way to Genesis chapter 1. All right, we're going to get right into it today. Genesis chapter 1. So if you're new to Curtis Lake, if this is your first time here, my name is Josh. We really are glad that you're here with us. We're really glad to have everybody together for a handful of weeks this summer. So throughout the summer, we're doing this series called Sunny D, where the D stands for discipleship. And Sunny stands for the 16 Saturdays in a row that it has rained. And for the fact that today we decided to have a barbecue, a cookout, and instead we have to have it indoors because the Lord promised us thunderstorms. But we're walking through just kind of various ideas of what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus? And for those of us who are following Jesus, how can we be encouraged and strengthened to walk more closely with him? And if you're here today and you're not a follower of Jesus, then we want to just give you a kind of a sneak peek into what some of that looks like. And so we're tackling a handful of questions. And the first question that we're looking at is, why do we gather? Like, why do we do this, right? And so we spent the last couple of weeks talking about different parts of that. Last week, I know, was a little heavy because we were talking about the dark side or the potential kind of negative side of what it would mean for something like an institution of religion to form, like an organized set of people. And we've seen at times where that has gone drastically wrong, but that is not the picture that Jesus envisioned when he imagined and birthed this thing we call the church. And so today is sort of it goes along with this question of why we gather, but it also, I think, just kind of brings us into an understanding of one of the spiritual disciplines as we begin to get ready to talk about why we need to grow. That's what we're going to be looking at over the next few weeks. So, with all that introduction out of the way, let's read Genesis chapter 1. I'm going to read a few verses. I'm going to invite you to stand one more time, and then I'll let you sit for about an hour, 15 minutes. But let's stand together as we read God's word. Genesis chapter 1, verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make man," or some of your translations may say something like mankind or humankind, "in our image, according to our likeness. They will rule the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, the livestock, the whole earth, and the creatures that crawl on the earth." So God created man in his own image. He created him in the image of God. He created them, male and female. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule the fish of the sea and the birds of the sky and every creature that crawls on the earth." Thank you. You may be seated. So many of you have heard this, read this thousands of times, right? This is a part of the account of God creating the universe. We highlighted kind of the end of that creative process where God creates human beings, right? And breathes the breath of life into the first humans. And then he gives them some commands. Did you notice them? He said, "Be fruitful," right? When God put humans into the perfect place, on a perfect earth, he expected that they were going to have lives that had purpose, that meant something. Like the idea of being fruitful is to be productive, right? That even when we were at our very best and in the very best possible kind of situation, even there, our lives were not to be something like what so many people imagine heaven to be, which is a bunch of poorly attired souls dressed in diapers, sitting in clouds and plucking on harps, right? But that when God created humans, he created us to live with purpose, with intent, that there was a meaning for our existence. And so he told them, he said, "Be fruitful." He said, "Multiply," right? He gave us, as well as every other biological part of the universe, the ability to reproduce itself, multiply. He said, "Fill the earth." And then he said, "Subdue it and rule it. That humans were given the commission by the creator of the universe to come and embrace the world that God had given us and to be caretakers of that world. And so God gave humankind dominion, right? The authority to rule over all of what I would like this morning to describe as space. He gave humankind dominion over all of space. Things like matter. Things that exist in the dimension of space. Things that have the quality of, if I could say it this way, thing-iness. Like the chair that you're sitting on is a thing, right, that somebody has made. But it's a thing. It's a thing because it possesses thinginess, as does every other particle and part of the matter of this universe that we find ourselves in. And you know what? We've done it, haven't we? Like, we have ruled, and we have exercised dominion. We have gone far beyond the early days of just trying to figure out how to survive and how to fashion rudimentary tools to help make some of the work that we would have to do a little easier. And over many, 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 many years, human beings have advanced technologically to where we get to sit in a room like this and enjoy the comforts and conveniences of all that we enjoy. We have found unimaginable ways of advancing, and we still continue to push the boundaries of progress, right? Like, not everything that could be invented has been invented, has it? I don't know about you, but like, my imagination doesn't work very well, where I can't think of anything else that we ought to make or that we ought to do, and yet, what God has wired into us, which is the ability and even the mandate to rule the earth, to exercise dominion over the earth, to subdue space, it has us continuing to push and to make and to invent, right? And that's all very, very beautiful things. Now, we're inclined to think, because we are creatures who live in space, and we are surrounded by things that also occupy space, we tend to think that in order for something to be real, it has to occupy space. That is, it has to have the quality of thinginess, right? This even happens, like, when we start to think about someone like God. It's incredible the number of people, and even those of us who try our very best to understand God properly in a theological sense, how we're inclined to think of God as something more like a thing in the way that we think of one another. It's almost as if something isn't a thing, then it really isn't a thing. And so what we need to understand this morning is that we live in this dimension of space, and we are largely concerned with what exists in the dimension of space. But while we care almost infinitely about matters of space, interestingly, the Bible cares less about the things that occupy space and cares far more about something else, and that is time. Time. I mean, God has all kinds of things to say about the things that occupy space, but God also has an incredible concern for this dimension that we often don't think about or don't think very well about, and that is the dimension of time. We read a portion of the creation account this morning, and we're going to read on a little bit. But one thing I want to point out is that there is, in the account of creation, the very first thing that God declared to be holy. Now, we all know or have an idea of like what it means for something to be holy, right? It's sacred, it's set apart. But what do you think about when you think about something that is holy? Like, what comes to mind when you think about holiness? My guess is you probably think of perhaps a place, a temple, a church, right? A place where people gather for a religious purpose, right? That would be a holy place. Or we think about holy things. We don't, in our kind of evangelical tradition, we don't really put a whole lot into, various instruments of worship. I don't mean instruments like drums and guitars and pianos and such, but like things that are used in the ritual practice of religion, where if you come from another kind of faith tradition, chances are you witnessed all kinds of instruments that were symbols and that provided religiously significant meaning. Like a bowl of water, right, that was used in ritual. That bowl and that water would have been considered to be holy. So when we think about holiness, we think about holy things. Maybe we think about God, right, that God is holy. But again, we struggle sometimes even to move beyond the fact that God isn't a thing. He doesn't occupy space. And so the first thing that God created that he declared holy, it wasn't a place, it wasn't a thing, and it wasn't a person, but rather, it was a day. Do you know that? It was a day. The very first thing that existed in this universe for which God declared to be holy, it wasn't some place in the Middle East. It wasn't some particular building. It wasn't the Ark of the Covenant. It was a day. Back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 31. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good indeed, right? God, he created all things. He did this evaluation of all that he had created, and he declared it to be good. Evening and then morning came the sixth day. Chapter 2. So the heavens and the earth and everything in them were completed. On the seventh day, God had completed his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. God blessed the seventh day and declared it, everybody say it, holy. For on it he rested from all his work of creation. I introduced this talk this morning by reminding us that we are people who occupy space and who live our lives frantically concerned about things that exist in space. Do we not? Like, does that not describe you at least a little bit? I mean, it describes me. If I think about the concerns of my life, they have to do with people. They have to do with things that I own. They have to do with things that I want to own. They have things that you own that I wish I owned. Like, we constantly dwell in the arena of that which occupies space. We could say it this way. When God created the world and us in it, and many of you know the story of how things went wrong. And things broke. And the world that God created is not, in fact, the exact same kind of world in which we live today, right? We recognize that things are broken. And in that, part of the curse that we as human beings experience is that the work that God had initially given us to provide us with real purpose for our lives has now, instead of merely being this incredible blessing, it has also become a curse, hasn't it? Right, so that now our work isn't just labor, it is now toil. Right? Some of us feel that more differently than others. Right? Some of us work in places where the toil is great, and some of us work in places where the toil is little. Now, if you're a person who works where the toil is little, I want to encourage you to come and fill out an application and join the staff at Curtis Lake Church, where I promise you'll find plenty of toil. No, I'm just kidding. So we could say that, like, in our experience, for every 6 days that we live, we are ruled by space, aren't we? All of those days exercise dominion and authority over me. That is, they have some level of control over me. While I like to think that I'm a free man, I'm a free bird, and I do what I please. No, the reality is I, like probably most of you, am ruled by all of those things that occupy space. Again, things that I have that I wish I had, that I have that are breaking, that I have that need replacing. And so for every 6 days, we are ruled by space. But we're told here that on the seventh day, God rested from his labor. That is, he ceased from his work, and God created rest. The Hebrew word for rest is menhuah. And it's not just rest, as if it were a negation of anything else, right? That you just come to a stop, like you're playing in life this game of green light, red light, right? And the 6 days of the week, it's green light, green light, green light, and then boom, red light, and everybody just stops and freezes. That is not what is to be understood with this word menuah. But rather, it is something that is positive, something that is real, something that could be said where God actively created rest. And not just rest, but peace, a calmness of mind, a quieting and rest, not only for the body, but of the mind and the soul. The Jewish faith has, for millennia, done interpretive work of the Old Testament parts of our Bible. And according to a Jewish interpretation of the act of creation, they look at the language that's expressed there and come to the conclusion that after the 6 days of creation, the universe still lacked something. What did it lack? It lacked this thing, this menuhah, this rest, this peace. And so came the Sabbath, came menuhah, and the universe was complete. You see, the point of the seventh day was because God understood that while we are creatures who occupy space and are fascinated by all that exists in space, it was very important that we have the opportunity to become aware of and attuned to something far more important. That is this thing called time. But isn't it interesting that instead, what we tend to do is we take the time that is to be regarded as holy, as sacred, as different from the rest of the time that we spend. What we do with that is we occupy it with more of the things that belong to the dimension of space. Right? We use the time and we convert it into an opportunity to do more work. How many of you have ever done more work on the Sabbath? We do it to make more things. We convert that time back to the era or the arena of space so that we can buy and sell, so that we can finish the project that we weren't able to finish in the 6 days. And then what we do is we end up looking at the command that God gave us as a burden. We find the command in Exodus 20, right? So Genesis chapter 1 lays the principle of the Sabbath before us. Exodus records the instance of God rescuing the nation of Israel from its bondage and slavery in Egypt, where he is now going to establish them as his covenant people, where he's going to exist in relationship with them. And he gives them some commandments, some instructions. And these aren't arbitrary commandments. These aren't things that he says because he just feels like this is how he wants it to be. But rather, he gives these commandments in order for the best possible experience of life that a person could experience if they were to follow his commands. So Exodus chapter 20 contains the Ten Commandments. Today we're looking at just the one. Verses 8 through 11 says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Right? In Genesis chapter 1, we are told that God ceased from his labor, and in that, the seventh day was made holy. God declared it holy. God created in that moment this thing called rest. Now he is telling his people many, 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 many years down the road, remember the Sabbath day. Remember it, why? Well, remember to keep it holy. Remember so that the Sabbath can continue to live out and to express the purpose for which I created it. That it is to be treated differently from the rest of time. You are to labor 6 days and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. You must not do any work, you, your son, or your daughter, your male or female servant, your livestock, or the resident alien who is within your city gates. For the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and everything in them in 6 days, and then he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day, and here it is again, and he declared it holy. Now, I want you to notice there, we are looking at this because, as I said just a moment ago, because of our desire to continue to exercise dominion over space, and as beings who feel like the 6 days that we are given are not quite enough for us to have quite enough dominion over the dimension of space, we need that seventh day. Because we need to work more, because we need to get more, because we need to buy more, because we need to sell more. Because there's always something more to do. And so then we look at the command that God gave us and we see it as a burden. And yet here it is described as a blessing. He rested on the seventh day, therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and declared it holy. We got to remember who God is speaking these words to. He's speaking these words to the nation of Israel, primarily, first and foremost. Like, that is the first audience that receives this commandment from God. And you know who they are? They're a rescued people. They're a people who suffered in bondage and slavery for hundreds of years. And now God brings them out of that. And he gives them the gift. He returns to them the gift that they had not experienced all of those years in Egypt. Do you think Pharaoh, like, blew the horn at the end of the sixth day so that the land that was being occupied by the slaves of Israel, that they could have a day to themselves to be refreshed and to recuperate? They didn't have that gift because they were slaves. And you know, what's interesting is that while when Israel were slaves, there was no rest, we find ourselves unable to rest, a lot of us, because we continue to be dominated by the things in the realm of space, by our possessions. You know, God knows there's only one proper attitude for us to have when it comes to our stuff. That while we have our stuff, how many of you have stuff? Right? What is the proper attitude that I am supposed to have toward my stuff? It is that while I have my stuff, I recognize that I could also do without my stuff. That we could do without feeling like we have to make them better, or that we have to be busy about collecting more of them. See, every 7 days, God intended that the royal privilege he had given us to exercise rule and dominion over the world, over space, is paused. It stops, it ceases. Now you might respond, well, is it possible for me to get all of my work done in 6 days? Well, let me ask you this. Is your work ever done? Like, it's never done, right? Why is it that we have been fooled into thinking that if we can exchange the time of the Sabbath back for the things that pertain to the arena of space, that somehow that is going to help us get to the end of our work? The work is never done, is it? It's not like the poem my wife very often loved to quote for me, when she'd say, a man's work is sun to sun, but a woman's work is never done. Right? No, I mean, like, think about the world we live in today, right? I mean, we're all, like, it doesn't matter for most of us. The degree to which you try, like, we are in this race. And so the Sabbath isn't celebrated because, oh, I got all my work done, and so now I can rest. Now I can relax. No, rather the Sabbath, what it's about living as if all my work were done. Because the reality is my work will never be done. Your work will never, ever be done. There will always be another thing to do. There will always be another thing to buy, another thing to get, another thing to acquire. But to understand the purpose of the Sabbath is to recognize it is an opportunity for me to live for 24 hours as if my work were done, even though it isn't. Now, I meant to say this like in the introduction, because I should have started with this, but it just occurred to me I never said this. I want you to know that the person speaking to you has absolutely no moral authority to talk to you this way this morning. Okay? Like, I am not telling, this is not a do as I do kind of sermon. Right? How many of you feel like you can come up here and preach a do as I do kind of sermon? Right? No. This is a do as I say, not as I do kind of sermon, all right? The Sabbath was given to us not to be a curse, not to cramp our style, not to to artificially or in an unhealthy way limit the extent to which God wants us to feel released to go into the world and to be fruitful and to multiply and to rule and to exercise dominion over the earth. What it is, though, is it is a recognition of my human limitations, that I can't go, 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 go. I can't do it all. And so what we need to recognize, I think, is that we need to refine an appreciation for the Sabbath. And this may not be something that we can convert over to overnight. Like, I'm not even doing a good job of it today. And I've spent the last 2 weeks and really a lot the last week thinking about this, and I'm still going to stink it up today when it comes to Sabbath. Okay? And so this is, may not initiate an instant and perfect kind of conversion, but I hope that it will trigger something in us that will get us thinking of how we need to refine an appreciation for what God created when he created this blessed day. We have to, if we're going to talk about like what needs to change, the first thing that needs to change is we have to embrace the rest of Sabbath as an end in itself. That the purpose, the beginning of it, the end of it, and the middle of it all together is for the purpose of rest. It's not right? Because this is how we kind of mess it up. When we try to practice Sabbath, here's how we adopt the principle of Sabbath into our lives. We say, you know what? You're right. I can't work all the time. So I need to rest so that I can work better. How many of you ever said that? I said that. Right? Like, oh, I need the rest because the rest is going to help me do better, be more productive, be more efficient, be ready for all that's coming my way on Monday through Saturday. That is the wrong attitude. The purpose of Sabbath isn't to make you better, to make me better at our work. It is an end in itself. That's a tough thing for people who live in a highly advanced, highly civilized, highly progressive kind of society where it's all about reaching and clamoring for more. We need to understand that the Sabbath isn't an intermission, but rather a climax. How many of you have ever gone to a show, like a Broadway-style show, a musical, something that was lengthy enough where there was an intermission? Some of you need to get out more, right? Like, enjoy the arts, people, okay? So what is the purpose for that intermission? Well, the movie makers haven't caught up to the purpose for the intermission, have they? Anybody seen the new Mission Impossible? I mean, great movie, but that was long. That's a long time to be sitting down. So an intermission is provided to you as a respite, right? As an opportunity to get up, go to the bathroom. Like, I think the idea is, well, we don't want you to be distracted from missing the very best parts of this performance, of this show, because you're uneasy, right? Because you're holding it in. Because you need to refill your popcorn or whatever. Or because you just need to stretch your legs and get some fresh air. And we treat the Sabbath like that. We treat it like it's an intermission, like it's just this thing that's in between, these long extended periods of work. Oh, I just finished a long extended period of work. Whew, Sabbath, right? And then back into a long extended period of work. But the Sabbath isn't supposed to be an intermission. It is supposed to rather be a climax. What needs to change? Number two, the Sabbath needs to be a chance for us to collect time instead of driving it away. Don't raise your hands, but how many of you just, you fill the Sabbath with things to do? Things that occupy space, right? Don't we? And so what we're doing, when we're doing that, we're driving time away, and what we need to do is become people who begin to collect time. And we collect all sorts of things. We collect all kinds of things in space. What we're very, very bad at, many of us, maybe all of us, is collecting time. Ancient rabbinical teaching would say something like, sanctify the Sabbath, or set apart the Sabbath, make the Sabbath different. And here's how you do it. Do it with choice meals. Like what we're going to do today. Like we're going to have a choice meal. Well, I guess it depends on what you brought. But sanctify the Sabbath by choice meals, by beautiful garments. Delight your soul with pleasure. Again, the Sabbath isn't about just bearing up with a day where I'm not allowed to do anything. But rather, and this is our third thing, we need to treat the Sabbath like a blessing and not a rule. In Jewish tradition, the Sabbath is regarded as a queen and as a bride, right? It's given these two different kind of images or symbols. It's a queen in the sense that it has authority and dominion over the people who are under it, right? So the Sabbath, whereas it is a kind of authority over me that provides some instruction for how I am to be when I am under its covering. It's a queen, but it is also a bride. And the symbol of the bride is that it is not a queen that you wish to repel, but rather it is a bride that you long to embrace, right? And so in Jewish tradition, this is how people would regard the Sabbath. They will accept the sovereignty of the day, but they will also lovingly and intimately embrace the presence of the day. It's not a how much longer before this is over, how much longer before I can open up the shop, how much longer can I do this or that. No, like when you get to that place where you're counting down the minutes, you've lost the Sabbath because it's become a rule instead of a blessing. In fact, in some Jewish traditions, there would even be, many of you know, Sabbath is practiced from Friday evening, right, until 24 hours afterwards. So Saturday evening, Sabbath breaks. And so the Sabbath often begins with a service, a meal, right, on Friday. And then it closes off. But like for some, there's a Saturday night meal after Sabbath is over. And the reason why they will have this additional meal is because they want for that to symbolize the fact that they are sorry to see Sabbath go away. Kind of like if you brought an honored guest into your home, right? And the hours were getting late and you knew and they knew it was time to go, but you just didn't want for that time to end. You just didn't want for your kids and your grandkids to get back on the airplane and fly across the country where you weren't going to be able to see them again. Like that kind of, the Sabbath was not seen as something, as a burden, but rather a guest to be welcomed. Finally, what needs to change? We need to think and spend time thinking what life is about and who it is for. You know, life isn't supposed to be all about our effort and effort only. We need to ask ourselves the question, well, what is my work for in the first place? Like, how many of you work hard? You've worked hard. You continue to work hard. Well, what is that for? Is it so that you can just continue to fill up the things that occupy space to get that space bucket more full? What is life all about? Who is it for? What's my work for? Who is our work for? And what matters the most? Like, what would it look like for us to take, like, every week for us to take one day to take a step back into a world that we weren't responsible for making and to enjoy a friendship with God that we didn't earn? What would it look like for us to actually embrace something like that? I want you to, if you wouldn't mind, could we just close our eyes here and for a minute, just kind of bow our heads, and I'm going to wrap up. But I just want us to close our eyes for a second because I want to ask you some questions. I want you to use your imagination as we close out our time together this morning. I just want you to imagine, like, what would the benefit be for you if you had one day every 7 days of real, actual rest? And I hope you don't say, well, first thing I would do is not come here on Sunday morning. No, but how would you benefit? How would you benefit to have a day where you no longer lived like a slave to the world, building its pyramids, erecting its structures and buildings, giving your life over to the man? What if you had an actual real day of rest where the rest was an end of itself? How could you benefit from a day, one day, where you could let go of all of the things that stress you out? I want you to think about, sorry to do this in church, I just want you to think about all the things that are stressing you out, right? Just like, let them just kind of like pile up on your back right now. How would you benefit if there was a day where you just let go of all those things, right? Because there was nothing you were going to do to try to fix them, improve them, make them better. What would it be like? How would we benefit from experiencing a day where we decided we were going to put off all difficult conversations for another day? What if we had a day where there was no to-do list? There's just nothing to do. What if we had a day where we weren't competing for something more, something better? What would it be like if every 7 days we had a day where we could be fully at peace with God? Not because we were distracted away from Him like we generally tend to be on the Sabbath, but rather because we were actually experiencing real nearness to Him.